Golf Smarter number 130 for June 10, 2008.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Controversy abounds with the commissioner of the SGA, Don Glenn.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week we tap the best minds in golf to help lower your scores with tips, drills, insights, and advice. In conversation with course pros, architects, authors, players, teaching gurus, and coaches, here's your host, Fred Green.
Hey there, and welcome to the Golf Smarter Podcast, and a pre-Happy Father's Day to you. We know how valuable your time is and appreciate that you choose to spend the next half hour with us, because Golf Smarter Podcast is brought to you this week by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of spoken word entertainment. Get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Log on to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Now, I want to give a thank you to Will Horning of Martinsburg, West Virginia, who's a new golfer and has recently found the Golf Smarter podcast. Will wrote to me with many questions about rules and wanted to know when Arnold Palmer will be on the show. You're not the only one. And if I'd ever seen the Sort of Golf website. Each week I ask you for your suggestions, so I was not about to blow off this request, and I checked out sortofgolf.com and loved it. Now, I want you to enter today's conversation with an open mind, because this is going to be a controversial topic. You may be on the fence about it, you could completely agree with our guest, or you want to sever this guy's head and put it on top of the flag at the 18th green at Torrey Pines South. Here's an interesting thing to consider. Golf Digest reported last year that every year the USGA offers an open book, no time limit test to members inquiring about their knowledge on the rules of golf. In 2005, they received 2,500 responses and only 21 got all the answers right. In 2006, again, they received about 2,500 entries and only 6 people answered every question correctly. In 2007, with about 1,200 responses received at the time of the printing, nobody got the answers correct. So a couple of questions come to mind. One, could the rules of golf be a bit too complicated? Two, is it fair for the average golfer that he has to play the same rules as the PGA Tour or top-level amateur tournaments? Three, are the strict adherence of these rules preventing more players from trying the sport, or better yet, are more golfers leaving the sport because it's just too damn hard? Don Glenn is the commissioner of the SGA, or the Sorta Golf Association. And as cute as the pun of Sorta Golf sounds, Sorta is actually an acronym for 7 Original Rules of True Ancient Golf. After the interview, I'm going to share some emails that I received from some friends and colleagues with varying opinions on this thing. But anyway, let's start with, welcome, Don.
Hi, Fred.
How are you?
Well, we're doing well. I want to thank you on behalf of the millions of frustrated golfers out there that you've given us access to your audience with this message of hope.
And what is the message of hope? What is the Sorta Golf Association? Is that what it is? SGA?
SGA, the Sorta Golf Association, is a, I guess some would characterize it as a renegade organization
that is
dedicated to recreational golfers and improving their satisfaction with the game of golf. And the primary way they do that is through a group of 7 rules amendments to the USGA rules of golf that greatly enhance player satisfaction. For most people, it's things they already do. It also maintains the competitive integrity of the game, so it's a win all the way around.
Why do you think this was necessary?
Well, several. I mean, I can cite you statistics which would bear out probably what your own experience is, which is as fast as people enter the game of golf, people leave just as fast. 3 million people a year decide I've had enough. It's too frustrating. It takes too long to play. And it's sort of the dirty little secret of golf out there. In an era when courses have been built more rapidly than ever before, to a large extent, they have trouble getting play on them. The average number of rounds has been flat to declining. And I guess what's even more concerning to the people who make a living off of golf is that core group of golfers who account for 70-80% of the rounds played out there, even that group is playing less. And so you know, we sat back and we said, you know, there's the problem here isn't with the equipment. The problem is with the rules, the burdensome and punitive rules of the USGA and the effect that they have on people playing golf.
Very interesting concept, and not one that I would disagree with very much. I mean, to me, there's a couple problems with golf going on. It takes too long. It's too expensive. It's too hard, right?
Right.
And I'm going to go right back to it's too expensive. And so, do you address those issues?
We do. We do. Let's take them one at a time.
Okay.
The first one you said was it takes too long, right?
Yes, sir.
By the applying what we call the sort of seven amendments to the rules of golf, and come back and look at those individually.
Oh, but we are definitely going to go back and look at those individually.
By applying those, we found that we can take an average of 30 to 45 minutes, for some people as much as an hour, off their time to play 18 holes. So the idea of a three-hour round of golf, a satisfying three-hour round of golf, is a reality. The way we've done that is we've taken out the things that waste time in the game of golf. And we can get to those when we get to the specific rules. The other is it's too expensive. You know, the golf industry would lead you to believe that the secret to improving your game lies in, you know, the latest equipment and hours of expensive lessons and pounding balls on the driving range. And the sad reality is that the USGA's own data will tell you that after 3 years of playing golf, improvement is very rare to get much improvement after you've been playing for 3 years. It's somewhat of a depressing thought there. The other thing is that if you look at what the average score is, which is 97 for the male and 114 for a woman, so on average, if you throw them all in one group, the average score is 100. That hasn't really changed in the last 50 years, despite all the technology advancements we've done with equipment, with all the changes with the ball. The reality is that the scoring isn't about those issues. Scoring is a problem because of these arbitrary and punitive USGA rules of golf, and people know this. I mean, golf surveys will show you that only 23% of people rigidly adhere to the USGA rules of golf because they know they don't produce a satisfying round of golf. And as we see the world, there's really kind of two big groups out there. There's this 20% that we call the purists, and they view golf as a metaphysical experience, and it's a proxy for life. And there's this bigger group, this 80%, that does most of the playing, most of the spending, and they view golf as a recreational fun enjoyment thing to do, and that group's at risk. And we're appealing to the 80% who matter the most. And it doesn't have to be at the expense of the 20%, but I think the 80% need to be able to feel good about the way they want to play. And Arnold Palmer and Bobby Jones would agree with me.
Well, but like the Golf Channel, you think that's for the 80 or the 20?
I think they play to the 20 because I think the USGA and the RNA cast a pretty big shadow over both the players and the equipment makers and the media to follow a pretty rigid ethos about, you know, golf and what it stands for and all those sorts of things. And so I think the people who are on those channels, I think, would fall more in the 20. But what's interesting is, you know, look at the golf media that's done the best. Look at the golf movies that have been the most successful. It was Caddyshack. It was Happy Gilmore. It was those. It was Tin Cup. Those that tap into the mindset of the populist golfer, not the rigid dogma of a cultist golfer.
That's a really interesting point. What are your thoughts about 18 holes versus 9 holes, or even 6 holes?
I think the reason to not want to play 18 holes is because you think it takes too long, and with sort of golf, you know, that issue somewhat gets removed off the table. And so I think, you know, there's beautiful 18-hole courses out there. You know, I think everyone would prefer to play all 18 if they could get it in a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think so. All right, we've got to talk about the upcoming date of June 14th, which is right in the middle of the U.S. Open. Or
yes,
it's,
you speak of nothing other than National Sort of Golf Day.
That's it. That's it. Tell me about this and why we should be celebrating with you.
Well, this is the, I think, the fifth observance of National Sort of Golf Day. Our movement is young, but it's not brand new. National Sort of Golf Day is nothing more than Independence Day for golfers who have thrown off the yoke of the USGA rules of golf, and this is their day to you know, declare their independence and encourage others to try the sort of seven rules of golf and see if it's a good fit for them. We're purposeful in always scheduling it on the Saturday of the U.S. Open because we think it's appropriate to put a well-placed thumb in their eye during their most important tournament.
And what should we do to help you celebrate?
Well, probably the best thing that you can do to celebrate is to, if you're playing golf that weekend, is to follow our easy-to-follow seven rules. The quickest way to learn those is to go to the sortofgolf.com website. There, look at the Golfer's Bill of Rights. That's what we call the whole seven amendments. They're very simple and straightforward. Now, if you don't know if Sort of Golf's right for you, we actually even have an interactive quiz there called the Sort of Golf Quiz. A couple years ago, it was featured in Golf Digest, and so we got a lot of traffic from there. But that can, through a quick, entertaining 10-question little interactive test can let you know for sure if Sort of Golf's right for you. And what we found is the vast majority of people know that it's right for them.
Well, actually, before you called, I did complete the quiz, and I scored a 65.
Hmm. So it now, shows that you have potential to be a sort of golfer, but also growth as well.
I love the number one, the breakfast ball. I'm a big fan of a breakfast ball because I play a course that doesn't have a driving range. Mm-hmm. So, my first swing is my first swing.
Right.
And so, yeah, breakfast ball, absolutely. But what's so funny about number one, the first question that you have, you're talking about Pebble Beach. Mm-hmm. And if your first ball goes off to the side there. That happened in a foursome. I got to play Pebble Beach earlier this year for the first time, and the group I was in, three of the four of us, did kind of shank the ball to the left.
And you joined a long and distinguished list. I've done the same thing.
Yeah, but luckily for me, I had a great drive on the first hole and went downhill from there. All right, I do. I know we've directed people to go to sortofgolf.com to look at the seven amendments, but I want to go over them with you. We have tons of time to talk about this, and I think it's really an interesting concept. And I want to go point by point over the seven amendments, and you call this the Golfer's Bill of Rights, correct?
Yes, indeed.
All right, let's do it. Number one.
Number one is improve your lie.
All right. You're going to have to explain yourself every time here.
Sure, and sure. And the premise behind this is that, you know, golf is an extremely hard game. USGA studies will tell you that only 0.1% of all golfers consistently shoot par. And yeah, I think it's 2.5% have a 5 handicap or below. The rest of us, the great unwashed, you know, have a huge difficulty with this game, and there's a fundamental reason. It's that the golf swing is impossibly hard. If you talk to any engineers about all the different planes that are moving and they have to be coordinated, it's no wonder that, you know, none of us have a consistent swing that can be mastered. And the margin of error is so minuscule when you start talking about a golf club hitting a golf ball that, you know, I think you have like a 2% range of error just to keep it in the fairway, let alone where you were aiming. And so, you know, unless you're genetically blessed and you have hit the lottery ticket in terms of hand-eye coordination and things like that, you know, the kind of golf game that we see on TV is never going to be the kind of golf game that we take to the course. And so our premise is let's allow ourselves the best possible environment to play our best possible golf. And that starts with improving your lie. And mm-hmm. So what that basically means is that, you know, wherever your ball is, within a club length, without getting any closer to the hole or moving your ball from the rough to the fairway, you got a club's length leeway to improve your lie. So you're set up to do your best possible shot. Golf is hard enough without the randomness of nature or poor greenskeeping. And so the only place where this doesn't apply is if you're on the green or in the sand traps. There, you got to play the ball where it lies. But your last thought before you hit should always be, could I improve my lie?
Okay. How did you guys did you, you know, have a committee meetings and you know, whittle it down to seven of these amendments, or how did you come up with the seven?
Well, we
and then I'll get to number two. I promise.
It was primarily through personal observation, both of myself and the group of guys I've played golf with ever since college. And so, you know, I'd like to say there was a lot of painstaking, you know, hand wringing and things like that. But you know, I came up with a list and refined it and shopped it with some people whose opinion I thought mattered. And this is where we landed. And it's, you know, it's been out for a good 5 years now, and it's proven to be, you know, the right seven.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. I think that pretty much on track with you most of the way, and we'll get to that in a second. So, all right, number one, improve your lie. Number two, inside the leather is good.
Inside the leather is good, which is, you know, most recreational golfers already follow this rule. And a lot of these rules are already kind of baked into our golf DNAs, which is why it's so easy to adopt them. But one of the most aggravating things about golf is missing short putts.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and then when as you get older, the yips kick in, and it's just, I mean, what causes more grief than that? And so our mindset is...
Hitting your drive out of bounds causes as much, if not more, grief for me.
Well, it can, and we get to that later. But
okay.
But there's many more opportunities to miss a short putt in a round. And,
yes.
And so we say anything, it's a time-tested policy, so we say anything inside the leather is good. Now, the other benefit to this is it's got a huge impact on speeding up play.
Yep.
I mean, we've all played behind groups where we watched four guys, you know, line up every single putt, and it was even the little short ones. And so there's a huge upside in terms of time saving if everybody just followed this common sense rule number two.
Okay, but I wish you would, because I've heard different definitions of what inside the leather means.
Well, we are using as our definition that lessen the distance than the end of the putter head to where the grip starts.
Okay, so you're down to the putter head to the grip, because I've heard other people define it as just the leather itself, just the grip.
Right.
That's awfully short.
And again, we're not about rigidity here. And so, you know, if a foursome would like to extend it to the whole length of the club, by all means, that's certainly something we would be comfortable
with. Okay, so these are flexible.
Very flexible.
Okay, number three.
Number three is really about this whole concept of damage control. Which, I mean, with the way courses are set up now, and you know, and let me just kind of cut to the rule. Rule number three is double bogey is max. The maximum score, no matter how many balls you hit out of bounds, how many you take to get out of the trap, the maximum score you can take on a hole is a double bogey. And so what this does is a couple of things. Certainly it speeds up play. I mean, even if you're not participating in sort of golf, the golfers in front of you, you certainly want to, because if you know double bogeys the most, then that, you know, slower players or less skilled players are kept moving on the course. The other thing it does is it keeps you from not forfeiting a career round. You know, you get to 16, it's the best score you've ever had, and then you pull two out of bounds. And so it keeps the wheels from coming off on one or two holes and ruining your whole round.
This is the one I have issue with, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Because I think triple bogey.
Mm-hmm.
I think because, well, two things. First of all, when I play, I try to limit my doubles and eliminate my triples.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's my own personal rule. But see, I think that double bogey, it's like you're given a little too much. And I also think that if you're on track to shoot your best round ever, it should be a real score.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, we're fudging the score here, but if you're going to have your best round, if you're going to tell somebody you shot a 78 once, but it's like 78, and I kind of fudged that, and I kind of, then it's not really a 78 anymore.
I would argue most 78s wouldn't strictly, anybody's best round, if I went back and said, did you strictly follow the USGA rules of golf, you didn't.
Okay, I'll buy that.
Yeah. Now, one of the big benefits of making a double bogey versus a triple bogey is the dreaded snowman never appeareth again.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's only on the par fives.
Exactly, meaning that you'll never card another eight.
Yeah.
Unless you enjoy it. I mean, you're always welcome to card, you know,
yeah,
score
right.
more.
I mean, that's the point of this, is that it's not the rules that you can kind of, you've created these non-rules that I think are wonderful. All right, so let's
We prefer to call them guiding principles.
Guiding principles. Okay, let's move on to number four.
Number four is pretty straightforward. We call this the one-in, one-out principle, and this speaks to penalty strokes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what routinely comes up as the most hated USGA rule is this whole stroke and distance penalty that, you know, if I hit my drive and I go up there and I find that it's out of bounds, I got to walk all the way back to the tee box and reload. And we think there's a much more simple way to do that.
And I think it's maybe the most misunderstood rule. I get more and more emails from people going, can you explain what that, how to count that and score that?
Yeah, it just seems excessively punitive. And so we just simplify it. So you hit the ball in the water, that's one in, you take it out and you drop near where it went out. Remembering to improve your lie, going back to rule one. Then if you hit it OB, you know, you got one in, one to take it out, and you put it close to where it went out of bounds. And, again, remembering to improve your lie and carry on from there.
Okay, so I want to clarify how this works then. Let's say I hit my drive OB. Mm-hmm. That's one. And then I put the ball where, I'm not going, you know, any closer to the hole, but I put the ball in bounds.
Right.
Is that two?
That's two.
Okay, and then my next shot is three.
You're hitting three.
So that's kind of like a lateral hazard?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, all right. As opposed to going back to the tee box.
Exactly.
Oh, so everything's a lateral.
Everything's a lateral. So the idea of stroke and distance is excessively punitive.
Absolutely agree with you on that one. All right, number five.
Number five is any found ball is yours.
Hallelujah.
Let me give you a little bit of background on this. That, you know, we did some research into this, and we found an estimate that on an annual basis, 2.5 billion golf balls are lost worldwide each year. And so if you try to dimensionalize that, and, you know, okay, the U.S. share of that's probably around a billion, which kind of equates to a sleeve for every man, woman, and child. If you look at the number of rounds played, that's almost two balls lost per player per round. Then if you took it down to the course level, that's 60,000 golf balls lost per course per year. You start to understand why there's all this lost ball clutter out there. And so, you know, we've all had the experience of hitting a wayward shot and going to look for it and find 15 other balls, none of which are yours.
Oh, yeah.
And so what we say is, you know, any found ball is yours. And, you know, you can play it with no penalty. Now, a couple caveats there. You want to make sure that that you're not picking up the balls of another group coming the other way. So once you've determined that, you know, and possession is 9/10 of the law, and so you're deemed to play it free and clear without penalty. And again, if you find multiple balls, you know, we have a suggestion that you keep the best conditioned ball, but you place it with the one with the best lie. So again, always remembering to improve your lie.
Well, I think that this promotes recycling.
There's a whole green aspect to this. That you being on the West Coast, I'm sure that, you know, California's leading this effort.
Absolutely.
It. Yeah. So we think that's another common sense amendment there.
I love it. I love it. Okay. So any found ball is yours, number five. Now we're going to number six, and this is something that we've talked about here on the Golf Smarter podcast numerous times, and I'm so glad that somebody other than me is thinking this way. Number six.
Well, number six is all equipment is conforming. You know, there's been all this hoopla from the USGA over the last, I don't know, 5-10 years over what equipment's conforming, what's not. And from our standpoint, this whole debate just seems really pointless when you look at the fact that the average score hasn't changed in 50 years. You know, despite drivers with spring-like effects, despite, you know, new balls that fly forever. The reality is, it's not about how far we can hit it. Can we hit it straight? Or can we hit it where we're aiming? And so our mindset is that anything goes on equipment. If a manufacturer is willing to make it, then it's okay to use. And in fact, we even extend this to the 14 clubs per bag limit. We think that's garbage. As many clubs as you want to take, you know, that's fine. And, you know, we agree with Arnold Palmer when he said, you know, we should focus on people having fun playing golf and using the equipment they enjoy.
Oh, and I've talked to people who said you don't even need more than 7 clubs in your bag. That's not even necessary. And I've always wondered, why does the USGA care?
You know, that's a great question. I think, if you look back in the history as to how they came up with that, it's some pretty, you know, arbitrary set of situations that caused that to happen. I think it's more tradition than anything else. Mm. But there's a powerful group that runs golf that likes to exercise its power. And one of the ways it does that is by, you know, being the steward of arbitrary and punitive rules like that. I mean, it's really interesting. The golf industry is in trouble. And, you know, rounds of golf are down, and equipment sales aren't what manufacturers wish they were. And often the rules body is at odds with the people who make their living from golf, and certainly at odds with the vast majority of people who play. It's an organization that's focused on a very small minority of golfers to the detriment of the masses.
And I think it's so interesting, and I'm not going to disagree with you that the golf industry is in trouble, and talk to many people who claim the same thing. But it's because people are so passionate about this sport, this lifestyle for some, that keeps it afloat, I would think.
Sure. Well, I think the crux of the issue is that golf doesn't have to be a one-size-fits-all.
Right.
The idea that all golfers come to golf for the same reasons and enjoy it the same way and thereby need the exact same rules or the exact same experience, that notion needs to be challenged.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. I mean, the golf course is wide open space, and why the rules need to be so rigid for that wide open space may not be necessary.
Well, and the other bigger issue is that the reality is people are already playing the way I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of people already play sort of golf in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this illusion, this idea of golf, as opposed to what the reality of golf is.
So you're the poster boy. You're actually, for the USGA, you're the target.
Yeah. Speaking truth to power has its risks.
All right, we've got one left here. Number seven.
Number seven, which I think, because of the mental side of the game, I know is a topic you touch on a lot. The number seven rule is a mulligan per round. And in fact, the theme line, the call to action of our whole movement is called "Give Me Mulligan or Give Me Death." This idea that that you need some forgiveness in golf, you need to be able to have a cushion, is really grounded in sports psychology. The game produces enough stress on its own, and we see that every Sunday as we watch even pro level people just collapse under the pressure of this game. Well, when you have too much stress, that's what causes choking. You know, psychologists will tell you, you get too much adrenaline in your system and your muscle memory, actually you forget how to swing. And one of the benefits of having a mulligan is it provides that sort of psychological cushion that you know, hey, if I really don't hit this where I want to, or if disaster hits me, I have an out. And just the fact of having that backup plan lowers your stress level, improves your game. And so the parameters we set around it is that mulligans are a well-heated tradition in golf, and we reinforce that. And we say that mulligans should be a part of every round, but we limit them to only the tee box and only one per round.
Oh, only the tee box.
Yeah.
Okay, and why only one per round? Why not one per nine?
Well, again, this is where we get into the guiding principles, where certain groups can certainly... we welcome people who want to explore deeper within each rule. So if a group mutually agrees that one per nine or even wants to get into trading mulligans or things like that, that's certainly something that sounds like it could enhance the satisfaction of a round, and that's what we're all about.
Well, I apologize for laughing. I feel like this is slightly tongue-in-cheek, but on the other hand, it's not. Really,
it's both. It's this movement is grounded in humor. We do not take ourselves seriously, but at its core, and why I think it's gaining so much traction with people is that it's grounded in real truth and real reality.
Why do you think we cannot have a separate set of rules for the tour and us?
I've never heard a compelling argument. I mean, I've heard arguments, but they've never been persuasive to me, and they were never persuasive to, you know, Bobby Jones or Arnold Palmer either, or Callaway as a company for that matter. You know, there's always been this argument of that there's two kinds of golf. There's, you know, professional tournament golf, and there's recreational golf, and not acknowledging that seems like a blind spot for the golf powers that be.
Yeah, because clearly people want to try to compete on that level in their mind. The beauty of golf is that you get to compete on their field of play, you know, on golf course. You can go play Torrey Pines. But the fact is that the same rules, I think that, again, your seven rules, and let's do them one more time. Number one, improve your lie. Number two, inside the leather is good. Number three, double bogey max. Mm-hmm. Number four, one in, one out. principle. Number 5, any ball found is yours. Recycling. Number 6, all equipment is conforming. And number 7, one mulligan per round. You know, I have a sense that this conversation is not only going to stir up some debate and controversy, it's going to piss off a lot of people in this audience. And that's fine, too. And please comment on the Golf Smarter blog. We invite you to do that. This is really fun. June 14th, National Sorta Golf Day. And we've been talking to the commish, Don Glenn of SortaGolf.com. Glenn, good luck. Congratulations. Let's stay in touch and talk again for next year's kind of National Sorta Golf Day and see what happens.
Terrific. Well, I appreciate the time. Let me make one gratuitous product plug here.
Please.
We've authored a book that builds a real entertaining mythology around how these rules were discovered and how they came to be, and it's been described as equal parts Caddyshack and the Da Vinci Code. Its title is The Muldooney Revisions. Muldooney, M-U-L-D-O-O-N-E-Y, and it's available on Amazon.com. So I encourage anyone who's interested in a very entertaining read, and those of you who are purists of the game who enjoy books like Harvey Pinnock's Little Red Book, Bud Schrake, who was the co-author of that, read the Muldooney Revisions and said it was equal part. Excuse me, he said it was for those who love golf, hate golf, or both. So I think whether you be a purist or a populist, you're going to find an entertaining read. So there's my plug.
And that's not a problem at all. And just to let the listeners know, if they are interested in picking up the Muldooney Revisions, it's going to be available on our website through Amazon. Go to golfsmarter.com and click on Smarter Shopping. And we have a number of golf books listed there that are right through Amazon. So please check it out, the Muldooney Revisions. Again, sortagolf.com. Don Glenn, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider in spoken word entertainment. Audible has over 35,000 titles to choose from to be downloaded and played back anywhere, just like the Golf Smarter podcast. So while I was on vacation recently, I listened to Clapton, the autobiography. Awesome. Just loved it. And that's what I love about audiobooks, too. Sometimes when I read, I fall asleep. When I listen, I'm captivated. So log on to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter to get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Again, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter, AUDIBLE, audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter for your free audiobook. So listen, after I did this interview with Don Glenn, I wrote to a couple of friends and colleagues and let them know about this show. And I don't usually do that kind of thing. I don't say, hey, you got to listen to this week's show. But I thought this one was so much fun and such a hot topic for many golfers that I wanted to see how they responded. And here's a bit of these responses. Now, this one, just a touch of it. I didn't give you the whole thing, but this is from my friend John, who writes the blog joyofgolfing.com. He says, Fred, I hate this idea. I'm sorry, Fred, but I'm disappointed in you for promoting it with any kind of positive spin. I like the quote from the small book, Miracle on 17th Street, where the father says, no gimmies, no mulligans, no bullshit. Let's play golf. For me, what makes the game fun is the challenge and the competition, including the short putts. And then he went on. That was just the start. Then another colleague of mine who's involved in the golf industry, and I'm not sure I should even use his name because, well, he's involved in golf, so I'm not going to use his name. But he responded to John's rant. I didn't know John had copied everybody. And he responded to John's rant, and he said, guys like this are exactly what is wrong with our game. They think everyone should play by their rules. I say this because the game of golf was invented long before the R&A and the USGA were around. While most golfers are happy just to be out of the office and in the sunshine having fun and shaping the rules to fit what is best for them, John wants to be a golf snob and tell everyone else how they should play. I had a high-ranking rules official tell me a few years ago that we would be better off with fewer players if those fewer players adhered to the rules defined by the USGA. All this while running ads on TV about how they want to grow the game. Yeah, right. Tournament play is a different deal. Of course, the rules must be clearly defined and adhered to, but recreational golfers should not be held to the same standard. I guarantee this guy does not play golf as defined by the USGA every time he plays. Oh well, I will go out and hit the little white ball around and enjoy the walk as it was meant to be enjoyed. These are great letters, and I'm sure you have an opinion as well. I've got to believe that you do, and hopefully I haven't pissed you off too much. Well, Sorta Golf has a great little video to support their efforts, and you can see that on the Golf Smarter blog in today's blog entry. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on this subject, and here's how we're going to do this. Don Glenn has offered a free copy of the book Muldooney Revisions, a six-pack of Sorta Golf balls, and a limited edition Sorta Golf bag tag with the Golfer's Bill of Rights on it to a Golf Smarter listener. We'll have this available for only 2 weeks, but we're not going to do a random drawing. The winner will be based on what you write to us. So go to golfsmarter.com and click on the contest tab and select Sorta Golf. Once there, complete the required information, and then we'd like your comments on the notes section. We'll be posting some of your thoughts on the Golf Smarter blog, and I'll be passing them along to Don Glenn, so he may be even putting them on his Sorta Golf blog as well. Deadline for entries is Sunday, June 22nd, 2008, and we'll announce the winner and read the comments on June 24th. Now, while you're on the contest page, make sure to register to win the new wedge courtesy of the wedge guy, Terry Kaler, who's president of Eidolon Golf. That was last week's episode. Deadline for entries to win an Eidolon Golf wedge is Friday, June 27th, 2008. We've received a lot of comments about our conversation with Terry last week, and hopefully we'll have an exciting announcement about the Wedge Guy in the next few weeks. Stay tuned for that. Today's quote was found on a website for a golf course. Frankly, I forgot which one, but I love the quote anyway. Will Rogers once said, "Golf is good for the soul. You get so mad at yourself, you forget to hate your enemies." If you have any quotes, comments, or suggestions, please, you know I look at them, click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
The Good Dog Podcast is for people who are passionate about dogs.
I love my dogs.
I interview veterinarians, dog behaviorists, and a whole range of experts who offer tips and insights.
A good German Shepherd makes decisions. It will say, well, you know, I know the light just changed, but on the other hand, there's a very quiet Prius coming your way, and so I'm going to stop, whereas labs have a tendency to just follow rules.
You'll hear about some amazing canines who help their owners to be safe, and in some cases, alive.
Sometimes diabetics will test and they'll still be at 100 saying, "I'm not going low, what are you talking about?" And the dogs let them know before they even feel it.
And you'll pick up ideas for solving a host of challenges.
Within a week, you're going to have a dog that is calm, he lies down quietly, he's just going to be a totally different dog.
I'm Joanne Green. Please subscribe to the Good Dog Podcast, found in iTunes or at smarterpodcasts.com.